Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We have a really tough housing market. Rent, own, doesn't matter. It is expensive. For those who had trouble making rent during the pandemic, there's been an extra lifeline, a really good one. More money than typical rental assistance programs, more flexible, more people qualified for it. It's called ERAP, or the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, and it's going away. The Baker administration has announced the state will stop taking new applicants on or around April 15th. After that, they'll use what's left of the $800 million in program money to pay qualified claims, but no one new will get help. Now, there is another program. It's a state program. It's called RAFT, but it is much, much less money. It's much harder to qualify for it. RAFT helps maybe 6,000 families a year. The federal money, 72,000 people. Laura Villafane got the federal help.
During the pandemic, I was facing an eviction due for non-payment of rent. At that time, I was impacted by COVID and I didn't even know. And I was feeling like just really ill.
She lost her job. She was caring for her kids and couldn't make a remote position work. Meanwhile, rent utilities still do. She turned to the state program RAFT to help her get by, but actually got help from the program that's now going away. So Laura's now a housing specialist with Maverick Landing Community Services. She helps families who need rental relief. We spoke with her earlier today, and I started by asking her what having those funds meant for her and her kids.
It was a big blessing, you know. It's a big fear that lives with you day and night of the worry, you know, are these funds going to come in? Are we going to be evicted? Where would we go? How do we go with the next step? It's a very scary moment.
So how does this affect how you support people now in your job working as a case manager for families who need rental relief?
I think it's like a really good opportunity that I have been given to work with families that are seeking the rental assistance, because I can empathize with them in some extent on, you know, what it is that they're going through and let them know like they have someone that they can turn to when the resources are here to help families. I myself have gone through it. I sometimes can share a story of what I went through with, you know, some families, just depending on, you know, when they come in here, what their emotions is like. So it's a great opportunity that I have, and I couldn't be any more grateful for it.
Is there a family you're working with now that, based on your own experience, has just really captured your heart? And if so, can you tell us a little bit about them? Obviously, I want to respect their confidentiality, but just tell us a little bit about them.
I honestly don't have just like one family. Like, all the families that I work with have really captured my attention and my heart goes out to them. I do have one particular family who, not so long ago, I wanted to say like in January, did face some hard times where her electricity was cut off and her gas was soon to be cut off, and her ERAP application was actually in process, and she has younger kids in the home. Her husband was impacted by COVID, lost hours of work, and she's not employed because she has like a few months old baby. And we were able to get together as a team to push for her application to get processed for approval. ERAP, Metro Housing Boston, our point of contact there, was able to contact the utility and get her services back up and running. So that's where we really touched me, because we didn't think that, you know, during this time of crisis, families would actually go through that type of hardship, and to the point that with infant in a home, that their services would be discontinued.
You thought they'd be safe from that, and they weren't.
Exactly.
And you referred to ERAP a couple of times there. ERAP is the federal money that's now getting used up. The state's not going to take any more applications for people after April 15th. It's more money. It's more flexible money for families who have rental assistance needs. Are you worried about that? And what do we lose, or what families go to risk when that money isn't there anymore?
I'm definitely worried. It's a big concern, not just for myself. I think it's for everyone statewide that is going to be impacted by this movement, especially that it's a program that's been able to assist families with more than just the $7,000 that RAF has to offer. We have families who are in arrears for more than 3 months of rent, where we've, you know, they've been funded for more than $10,000 to assist them in their arrears. It's a big scare for everyone. We're going to see big amount of increase of no-fault evictions because people will no longer be eligible for the program. Their time may have been maxed out and the funds are just not going to be there. We need more than $100 million, you know, for the rental relief program to help thousands of households during this time. It's like this program has really been like a lifeline for families to fight to stay in their home.
And Laura, last question for you. Is there something that you want people to understand about the program, about the funds and about the families who need it that maybe people don't understand right now?
I just, you know, like to voice that, you know, if you're a Massachusetts tenant and you're in rental debt, we ask that you please apply for the rental assistance before the deadline, April 15th. We ask for all landlords to support their tenant through this process so that, you know, they can get the assistance that's needed, because it's not only beneficial for the tenant, but it's also beneficial for the landlord who at that moment may have a mortgage debt. And there's also programs out there to help the landlords with the mortgage debt as well. I just ask for everybody to just get the assistance as they can before this deadline, and just know that it's a great program and it does help. And it's just sad that it's going to be discontinued.
Laura Villafane is a housing specialist with Maverick Landing Community Services. Laura, really appreciate you joining us. Thanks.
Thank you for your time.
So let's turn now to the bigger picture on ERAP, on rent assistance in general in Massachusetts. Kelly Turley joins us on the line. Kelly is Associate Director at the Massachusetts Coalition for the Homeless. Kelly, welcome. So, Kelly, this can be confusing. You got federal money, you got state money, some's more flexible, some is less. The federal money, the part that's about to essentially get spent down and go away, more people qualified, you could get more money, you could be making more money when you qualified. Is all of that right?
Yes.
And so who could you help with this federal money that before you couldn't? Can you give me an example?
Sure. So under the federal funds that are currently still available, households up to 80% of the area median income could qualify for funds. So for example, in the Boston area, a family of three could make up to $87,000 a year. And then once we shift over to the state-funded program, RAFT, Residential Assistance for Families in Transition, only households at or below 50% of area median income will be able to qualify. And for that same family of three in Boston, the maximum income would be about $54,000 a year. So slightly higher income families are able to be served under the Emergency Rental Assistance Program now. And as you said, the benefits are much more generous. They're based on a number of months of assistance versus a cap. And as you also mentioned, the current cap for the RAFT benefits is $7,000, which is not enough for many households to cure their arrearage and to be able to maintain their tenancy.
And this RAFT program, so the RAFT is what's left, and it's what was here before COVID as well. You just said, you know, there's a cap of $7,000 on it, but it's funded a lot less too. It's tune of around $20 million a year, which means even if you are that family of three in Boston who makes around $50,000 a year and you qualify, you're not necessarily going to get it, right?
Right. So we've seen during the pandemic that the state has made deeper investments in rental assistance. And so for last fiscal year, there was over $54 million for the RAFT program. But once the federal government came in and funded the ERAP program, the state lessened the funds for RAFT. because the federal program was more generous and the federal funds were available. But the legislature and the governor have made recommendations to supplement the RAFT program for the remaining months of this fiscal year. So between now and the end of June, we do anticipate additional funds to be made available for RAFT. Both the House and Senate have recommended $100 million more for RAFT for these next few months. And we're working alongside other advocacy groups to secure hundreds of millions of dollars for the next fiscal year, knowing that this crisis is going to remain with us for the months and years ahead.
And that's really what's at the heart of the moment. So you said a couple of things I want to pull out there, Kelly. So there is a push to take the state money and fund it up more to help close some of the gap that's going to happen when the federal money shuts down, basically. What I think I hear you saying is that federal money was helping organizations like yours meet a level of need that existed before, but the money wasn't there before. Is that fair?
That's fair, yes. And you know, we've been working for a number of years to strengthen and improve the RAFT program. The RAFT program was initially just targeted to families with children, so unaccompanied adults, youth, elders, people with disabilities who didn't have children under 21 in their household couldn't qualify for funds. But now RAFT is open to all household types. We were successful a few years ago to get RAFT expanded so that households could access funds before they were actually in court for an eviction, so more upstream funds. So these changes are being maintained for the program. But we were disappointed that the cap on assistance was lowered. It had been up to $10,000 per household up until the end of 2021. And on January 1st, the maximum benefit level decreased to $7,000. So we're also working as the legislature considers the supplemental budget in front of them to raise those benefits back to that $10,000 level. And we're really pleased that last week the state Senate included language in their version of the budget that would restore that $10,000 cap. We know that that's not going to be enough for all families, but that certainly would be a step in the right direction.
All right. So we are in a tough, tough housing market here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We know this, whether you're trying to buy, whether you're trying to rent. There are a lot of people who are paying too much of their income or more than they can afford in rent, et cetera. I want to understand, as this money sunsets, right? We've talked about this since the beginning of the pandemic. If new money comes in, but it's short-term money, and people begin to rely on it, then what happens when it goes away? We're going to talk with doctors a little later. You know, money's going away to pay for vaccines for people who are uninsured, for example. This is going to happen lots of different places. Did we plan the way we should have for the fact that the money was going to go away, Kelly? Were we keeping our eye on that ball?
I think a piece that's important to keep in mind is that even though the federal funds directly for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, ERAP, are running out right now for Massachusetts, that the state is sitting on $2.3 billion in remaining funds from the American Rescue Plan Act. The state could take a significant portion of those funds and allocate them for emergency rental assistance. And advocates, providers, families, and individuals who are facing housing instability have been advocating with the legislature and with the Baker administration to make sure that these needs aren't forgotten, that while the state is sitting on these funds, which don't have to be spent for the next couple of years, but that the funds are needed now. So we're really making that push, that additional federal funds that are for COVID relief are used for rental assistance so that we can help families and individuals bridge this gap while people are still getting back to work.
So more than $2 billion is a big chunk of change to be sitting on. At the same time, you know, sort of per the question I just asked you, planning for the longer term, if the legislature, if the governor moves some of that $2 billion to do this now, are you worried about something we won't be able to do later that we're going to need to do? I mean, our housing market is not going to get that much better that fast.
Right. So there's definitely a lot of work that needs to be done. And there's simultaneous campaigns to make sure that we're making investments in long-term affordable housing, that we're making investments in upstream homelessness prevention, as well as supports for families and individuals so they have jobs that pay a living wage and to try to equalize the rental market to make sure that we're providing housing in an equitable way. But these particular funds that have been allocated for COVID relief, we think should be used over the course of the next several years that they're made available by the federal government to address the housing needs, and certainly using that additional time to make sure we're doing all we can so that everybody in Massachusetts has a safe and affordable place to call home.
All right. And in a sentence, Kelly, do you feel like you're going to be successful? Do you think you're going to see more money allocated?
I do think we'll be successful. We're concerned with that April 15th deadline when the program is supposed to stop taking applications. So it's not clear we'll be able to get across the finish line, get additional funds allocated before then. But we're hopeful with the $100 million that the House and Senate have recommended that we will hopefully keep tenants afloat.
All right. Kelly Turley is Associate Director at the Massachusetts Coalition for the Homeless. Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tiziana.
Stay with us. Coming up, if you're over 50, you're now eligible for a second COVID booster, but the CDC isn't officially really recommending it yet. So we have questions. We're guessing you do, too. Let's ask the doctors. 1-800-423-8255 for your coronavirus questions. That's after the break. I'm Tiziana Deering, and you are listening to Radio Boston. It is time for Ask the Doctors. Yesterday, the FDA surprised us a little by authorizing an additional booster of either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines for adults over 50 and for some folks who are immunocompromised. The CDC, which is always kind of step two in these things, has made the doses available but isn't necessarily recommending them at this point, which is a little confusing, especially since up until now the drumbeat has been, if there is a shot available, you get it. Meanwhile, COVID traces in wastewater positive cases have ticked up a little in the Boston area, with the contagious Omicron BA2 variant now accounting for more than 70% of cases in the region. That, of course, raises the specter of another potential surge. Or does it? We have questions, and we haven't even touched on Moderna's quest to vaccinate kids ages 5 and under. So let's get after it. And we want you to join the conversation. What do you need to know today about whether to get that next booster, about whether you should be masking up again because of the BA2 variant, about when the littlest in your household might actually get a shot? Call us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us your questions at Radio Boston. Here with us, doctors Cassandra Pierre and Sabrina Asumu, infectious disease specialists at Boston Medical Center, doctor and assistant professors at Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Asumu, Dr. Pierre, welcome back to both of you.
Hello. Great to be here.
Okay, so Dr. Asumu, big news this week. CDC says the second booster of Pfizer and Moderna vaccines now available. This is people over 50 who had their shot, their last shot, more than 4 months ago, as well as younger people who have additional health concerns. But they didn't really say, hey, go get it. So that raises some questions. Is it time for that second booster for those people or not?
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on again. No, it's a very interesting time that we're living in. So I would say, so let's look at the data for this fourth shot. So this data was support, I mean, in terms of the change, was supported by data from Israel that showed that if you looked at people who were 60 and older, there was a benefit to getting that fourth shot in terms of infection and disease severity. There was also another data from Israel that used healthcare workers who were younger. And for them, when they looked at the immune response, it didn't seem to be as much of a benefit for younger people and healthy people. So what would I say? Actually, I called my mom this morning because she's in her 70s and she also had J&J. So I'm always like on the lookout for new information. So what I would say is, you know, if you are older, so, you know, 65 and older, this is definitely, you know, a shot that you should definitely consider because there will be some benefit. The FDA and actually the CDC added the recommendation of, you know, if you're 50 and older and you have underlying condition for severe disease, it is reasonable. But I would say the message should be if you are 65 and older or if you're 60 and older, this should be a shot that you should consider getting the fourth shot.
So, Dr. Pierre, one of the things that I immediately started hearing from people was, well, okay, but if I get this now, What if there's something different later, or there's a more specialized vaccine that comes out in the fall, or, you know, the fall comes around, there's a new surge, and it's been 4 months now since I got my second booster. What about those kinds of timing questions?
No, those are really important questions. And yes, there will be likely an increase in infections in the fall, and there possibly will be new vaccines that are available. And so I think that timing question is important. Certainly, to Dr. Soon's point, people who are 60 to 65 years of age and older, or maybe even those in the 50 to 65-year-old category who have underlying comorbidities or who are immunocompromised, should consider getting it now, because we do see this subvariant BA.2 on the rise. But for those who are younger, who are healthier, don't have other comorbidities, I certainly think that the timing question is important, because it is possible, just like we saw with the first booster, that the immune protection with this second booster may wane over a matter of months. And we really will want that protection in the fall with the anticipated increase in infections as we all move indoors, or if we see another concerning variant on the rise.
So Dr. Asumu, we had a caller who called right at the top of the show. Of course, this is our second segment, so he was waiting too long. His name is Bill. He was in Newton. He was excited to get a second booster, wanted to know when they'd be available here and how he could find where to get one. Now, I know the Baker-Polito administration announced earlier this afternoon that the boosters are available here in the state. How does one find one now, Dr. Asumu?
Yeah, no, that is a good question. And actually, my mother lives in Maryland, so it's not Massachusetts, but it's the same issues in terms of, you know, if you try to get it and you walk into a pharmacy today, can you get it? And actually, she tried to sign up and was not able to get it. So I think that we're going to maybe give our pharmacies, you know, a day or two turnaround time to update their mechanism. But so what is the good news? The good news is those boosters are the same that we've been giving before, right? And so the pharmacies and other places have the vaccine. They just need to probably update their procedure. So my guess is if you go to CVS today, they may not have updated their indication. That's actually what my mom told me. They told her she's not immunocompromised, and so she can't get this shot today. So I would say if you are eligible, just give our systems a day or two turnaround time to be able to update their procedures. But my guess is you should be able to do that relatively soon by going to the various sites in the same way that we've done this before.
You are listening to Drs. Sabrina Asumu and Cassandra Pierre on Ask the Doctors here on Radio Boston. You can call with your coronavirus questions at 1-800-423-8255. Dr. Pierre, you know, I'm mindful. So here we come. There's this option now for a second booster if it's been 4 months since your first booster, or a fifth shot if you're immunocompromised. And yet in Massachusetts, our uptake on boosters is not what our original vaccinations were, less than 50%. So how do we think about sort of the pacing on availability versus the pacing on uptake with even the first booster? I'm mindful. We just did a segment before the break about rental assistance at the federal level, COVID-based going away. Federal money is going away to support people who are uninsured to get boosted or get vaccinated as well. How do we think about this?
Thank you for asking that question. I really do worry, as you've discussed, about this federal funding going away, because we are, despite what people may have heard, this pandemic is not yet over, and those funds and those first boosters are critically important as part of our strategy to really get into eventually that endemic phase. So yes, the first booster is very much important, and that really is the key. So, as much as, we have people who are really interested and motivated in getting that second booster to protect their health, and it's wonderful, as a population, for public health, we really do need for people to get that first booster. We need more people to get that first booster to continue to lower our risk, to lower our risk of infections and days off from work, to lower our risk of long COVID, but also, importantly, to lower the risk of critically overwhelming our hospitals come fall and winter, and keeping, our elderly and our immunocompromised safe.
So, Dr. Asumu, I'll come back to you, and I'm going to paraphrase a caller because his audio quality is not that great. He's saying that He's got kids. He's thinking about the vaccines, but he's not comfortable giving them to his kids if they're not fully FDA approved. Now, we know Moderna also is seeking, you know, emergency use authorization for a vaccine for kids ages 5 and under. So it's a good time to review the difference between full approval and emergency use authorization and how people ought to think about that.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. No, we still seeing, we actually seeing the same questions that keep arising. So first of all, I would like to reassure the caller that even though some of some of the vaccines are under emergency use authorization, they've been thoroughly vetted and have been shown to be safe and effective. And the difference is that, you know, for the EUA, the bar is still high and it's used because it's in a pandemic and we want to make sure that vaccines are available as soon as possible. It doesn't mean that, you know, we cut any corners or that we didn't make sure that they were safe. It just means that at the time they got enough data that the vaccine was, you know, safe and effective. And I'm not just talking in a vacuum. I can actually tell the caller that I have a 5-year-old. And you've probably heard me share this story that I was one of the parents who was online as soon as I was able to get it because I know the data and I know that these vaccines are safe and effective. And so what I would tell the caller is if you still have questions, please talk to your healthcare professional so that they could answer your specific question. But these vaccines are safe and effective. And, you know, if your kids are eligible, please do vaccinate them.
So, Dr. Pierre, we have a Twitter question from @PennySchwartz, and this is another thing about timing. So the question is, best timing, if you're over 65, fully vaccinated and one booster and had Omicron breakthrough 2 months ago. And this is another thing, Dr. Pierre, that I've heard come up. You know, if you had an Omicron breakthrough case, how does that affect timing of when you might get an additional booster if you qualify?
Yeah, another great question from Penny. So, yes, it is important to think about recent infection in terms of when is the right time to get the second booster. I will also want to say that there really is no, there are no safety downsides to getting the second booster. So I think it's important to know. It's not something that we're concerned about. We're not seeing increased risk of side effects with these second boosters. However, people who have recently had the Omicron, while it's certainly not an immunity cloak completely against the subvariant or potentially other variants that arise, having had an infection within 90 days does significantly lower your risk of reinfection. So that is another important consideration to make. 2 months into or 2 months after an infection, getting close to that 90 days. So just thinking about that, I think it would probably be important to think about scheduling that second booster at least within the next month or so, you know, as soon as or right before that 90-day cutoff. And it also does, you know, obviously risk and risk behavior also matters. So thinking about whether you are about to go on vacation, maybe engage in other high-risk behavior would be another consideration to make, even if you have recently had an Omicron infection.
So Dr. Sabrina Sumu, I'll bring Jim up. Jim is on the line from Hull. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is this. I had three Pfizer shots so far, and I want to get the booster, the fourth shot. My question is, can I switch my fourth shot to Moderna, and is that allowed? Is it safe, and is it recommended?
Dr. Sumu.
Yeah, I want to say I love being on this show because the questions are always like, you know, the tough questions that we have, like the latest day. I mean, these callers are always just so up to date with everything. So yes, this is actually a really great question. So we do actually have data that show that if you actually mix and match, especially with the mRNAs, you could actually have there's actually some potential benefit to doing that. So my answer would be, I would not, like, if you're ready, if you're eligible, you're at risk for like severe disease, if you're 50 or if you're 65, I would not shop around, right? I wouldn't delay if you think that you need this booster. But if you're offered and it is available, it is safe to mix and match. And actually, as I said, there is actually potentially a slight edge to actually doing that. It is not necessary, but if it is available, it is something that's perfectly fine to do. And actually, I ended up doing that because I initially had Moderna. And then when I showed up, they had, you know, had the choice between Moderna and Pfizer. And I was like, all right, let me switch up and get Pfizer this time. So because I'd seen that data that it could be provide a little bit of benefit. So that would be my answer to that.
So Dr. Pierre, adding on to that, some language from the CDC, quote, separately and in addition, based on newly published data, adults who received a primary vaccine and booster dose of Johnson & Johnson's Janssen COVID-19 vaccine at least 4 months ago may now receive a second booster dose using an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine, end quote. And there's some reporting today that the data suggests that's probably a wise course of action. Comments on that?
Yes, absolutely. I know we've been talking about the benefit of getting an mRNA vaccine as a booster, even for the first booster of the J&J, but the more recent data that recently came out showed that individuals who got their second booster with an mRNA vaccine have a lower risk of going to the ED or being hospitalized. So it is a strong recommendation in this case, if you received the J&J as your primary vaccine, to get an mRNA booster for your second booster.
All right. So we're running a little bit low on time. We had a caller, Neil from Lynn. I'm going to paraphrase the question. Will we need updated COVID shots every year like we do the flu shot? And will those updates sort of change the vaccine year to year the way it does with the flu? Dr. Asumu.
Yeah, I know that's a hard question, you know, and I totally understand, especially from the public's perspective. You know, initially the message was, you know, all you need is to get fully vaccinated and then we're good to go. And then as we discovered and we had more data coming along, we discovered that booster is actually very helpful. And then now here we are today with the fourth shot. So it is hard to know what, you know, the future is going to bring and what we'll end up getting. But what we do know, and what I want to emphasize, is that that first booster is critical. And I actually suspect that in the future, it will be actually part of the series that you get your three shots. Now, in terms of getting yearly boosters, I think that it's going to depend on what variants we have and how much level of immunity there is in the community. And also, it may depend about your own individual risk. But what I want to emphasize is if you haven't done so yet, please do get that third booster because it is really critical for everyone.
And just briefly before we go, Dr. Pierre, are you very concerned about a BA2 surge? It's hard to kind of read these tea leaves.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely cautious. We're looking at the wastewater detail every day very carefully. We know that there are a large number of cases in Europe and, of course, Asia. Of course, the mitigating aspect potentially on our side is that we had a very large surge during Omicron. And as I've mentioned, individuals who've had a recent infection have a lower risk of reinfection with the subvariant. That being said, you know, we also have probably less than 40% of individuals have gotten their first booster and so remain susceptible to infection and reinfection. So I think it is a mixed message at this point. I think we need to be cautious, we need to be alert, and importantly, I think we really need to be ready to put back some of the mitigation efforts if necessary. At this point, we're still seeing that although the numbers are slowly creeping up, they're doing it slowly, and we're not seeing a rapid surge the way that we did with Omicron. So I think we just need to continue to watch the numbers. I'm certainly concerned, however, for those who remain unvaccinated or under-vaccinated. So those are the people who I have concern about, but I think time will tell.
All right, that is Drs. Cassandra Pierre and Sabrina Asumu, both infectious disease specialists at Boston Medical Center. Thanks for joining us today on Ask the Doctors.
Thank you for having us on. I'll guarantee you the best time
you ever had. Ain't no hurry. Yeah, let's just keep playing that. Because I love it. You are listening to folk and blues musician Chris Smither perform at Cambridge's Club Passim in October 2020. The show, celebrating the release of his new album, streamed virtually with less than a dozen in-studio audience members. October 2020 means before vaccines. Feels like a different world, really. Well, what about live music now? A year and a half later, bigger audiences are back in person, and with this winter's Omicron surge, in the rearview mirror. Local music venues are hopeful that this summer will actually be one for the record books. But that doesn't mean they've thrown out what they've learned during the pandemic. What worked during the depths of our isolation can still actually be an important part of the offering now. So we're about to welcome a couple of guests to talk about it. We invite you to join us. Have you attended a virtual show during the pandemic? What'd you think? Now, are you going to go back to in-person shows? Maybe you haven't. If not, why not? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. As you know, you can also tweet us. We're at Radio Boston. You can email us, radioboston@gmail.com. So with us now, Matt Smith. He is the managing director of Club Passim, and J.J. Gonson, owner of Once Lounge, formerly in Somerville. Matt, welcome.
Thank you so much, Tiziana.
And J.J., welcome to you, too.
Hi, thank you so much.
So, Matt, I have a little wood on the edge of the desk here knocking on it. Are you feeling hopeful for live music right now?
I am. You know, we've had a lot of fits and starts in the last couple of years, and I continue to stay hopeful because that's what we have. You know, we're going to do all we can to move forward, and we're seeing folks starting to come out again.
So, JJ, I do want to look ahead to what's hopeful, but we should take a second to step back. Once closed its physical venue space in the summer of 2020, because of the pandemic, it moved all online. You recently started looking for a new physical home. You made a bid for the space previously held by Oberon. So first, any luck with that?
No, sadly not. We had really high hopes for it, but we just recently found out that they did go with a different tenant.
I'm sorry to hear that. I want to ask you now. Sorry. Yeah, I'm sure. How are you feeling about that decision to have closed the doors of Once then, and how Once's journey is going forward now?
Oh, that's such a big thing. Obviously, it's been a roller coaster. Fits and starts is like, you know, that's such a nice way of saying what the industry has dealt with over the last couple of years. And I think that it's left us all bruised and uncertain. I'm very excited about the things that I'm doing, as much as I really truly, you know, I mourn the loss of a wonderful space, and always will, really. And you know, doing the things that I can do to stay involved, because really what it comes down to is there's amazing music here. And it's a great joy and a great privilege to be involved with it. So that's what Once is. You know, that's what it is. And fortunately, it turns out it can be in other places too.
So I do want to say this, and we'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute. You know, Once has gone forward, outdoor concerts, live events in other venues. And Once isn't alone, Matt. You know, Great Scott, Thunder Road, Bull McCabe's, all closed because of the pandemic. How do we quantify the changes and the losses in the local industry over the last couple of years? How do we get our heads around that?
Well, I mean, it's happened everywhere. And that loss is not, it's felt by the community as a whole, because for me, these venues, I don't think of as competition. You know, when there are a lot of good clubs around and they're doing well, that's good for everybody. It keeps a real vibrant music scene here in the Cambridge-Boston area. Okay. And that the loss of those places is definitely felt by us. When people think like, oh, you must be doing great because there's fewer clubs. Like, no, that's not what it looks like. When there is space for all these artists to be coming in, that's when we're all doing well.
And JJ, I have to imagine that every artist out there listening says, right, not good for us either.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Matt. There's no question that the culture, you know, the vitality has to be all over the place. It can't just be in one place. It has to be in different venues with different sound systems and different audiences. And the bands need to have that to grow and learn so that they can grow as performers in different spaces. And, you know, there's no question there's not enough space for all of the wonderful artists as it is. So like Matt's saying, it just, you know, it ripples out to everybody. And then it ripples out further, because when a venue closes, we all know that the impact on the community is enormous. The restaurants that don't get the revenue before and after the show, the cabs or Ubers that don't drive people to that show, and the store on the corner that doesn't sell a soda to somebody walking out of that show or whatever it is, like all those places just take such a huge hit. It's a big community.
We're talking about music, live music, now and going forward with Matt Smith of Club Passim and J.J. Gonson of Once. I'm going to go to the phones here and we welcome your contributions. Are you going back to live shows? 800-423-8255. Andrew's on the line in West Roxbury. Andrew, go ahead.
Hi. First, let me send some love to your guests and any other indie promoter who isn't just affiliated with Live Nation or Bowery Presents. We appreciate your work. I went back to indoor shows just a few weeks ago for the first time since February of 2020, and I'm concerned that as soon as the city of Boston dropped its mask and vax requirement, venues have done the same. They are like among the riskiest activities that you can really partake in. You know, being in an indoor event where people are drinking and packed together, and even though they're no longer required to, I really hope that venues will reconsider taking more safety measures so that there's not some kind of outbreak that sets the...
Thanks, Andrew. Thank you. And I hear your concern. I hear your hopefulness of avoiding a future surge. Matt, Andrew was talking about some venues in Boston there, and you're in Cambridge with Club Passim, but you have taken a different path.
True. Cambridge has lifted the vaccine and mask requirements for indoor spaces, but we have remained with our policy of having shows be vaccine. You have to show your vaccine proof and you have to be masked when not actively eating and drinking. And we don't plan to change that anytime soon. We want to keep watching and seeing what's happening out there in the world before we just lift those policies.
And JJ, yep, jump in.
Oh, I'm sorry. We most of the shows that I'm producing right now are at a terrific room called the Rockwell, which is the former Davis Square Theater downstairs in Davis Square, and they and we have kept our mask on, vax card policy, as well.
So JJ, you just talked about, you know, doing some shows at the Rockwell. Let's hear a little song. This is some music from local singer-songwriter Ryan Lee Crosby, who will be playing at a Once Presents show at the Rockwell in May.
Down so long. Seemed like nothing gonna change.
So Matt, live music. Now, you've continued streaming, which was successful for you at Club Passim during COVID. And I want to hear you talk about the balance between those things. You'll continue to do that. But I got to believe that you believe there's something magic about being live and in person, too, especially in a space as intimate as Passim is.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we were streaming before the pandemic, and some folks would think that, like, oh, well, why would you be putting this out on the internet for a cheaper dollar amount than you would for people coming into the show? Won't that mean people are just going to stay home and watch and not come out? But that's a different kind of music fan. The people that want to come out and see live music, they want to be in a room experiencing something together with other people. And what the streaming has done, it has allowed people that weren't doing that anyway to be able to engage in a way that they feel comfortable with and that they feel safe with. So, you know, I think there are people that are never going to go back to live music again. That is just their mentality now. But this allows them to be able to have access to that live music in a way that they feel safe and comfortable. So for us moving forward, it made absolute sense to upgrade all of our streaming equipment to really give a good representation online for what's happening in the room.
Let's go back to the phones here. Jan is on the line in Arlington. Jan, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a folk musician addict, I should say, both local as well as national. And I've seen a lot of, I've been seeing live concerts. Now, 2 years ago, February, I had tickets for an On a Winter's Night, Christine Levin, the Kennedys, Patty Larkin, a whole stage full of people. And it was canceled, obviously.
Right.
Two years later, the Regent Theater in Arlington held it with masks required, vaccinations required. There was not an empty seat in the house, and it was spectacular for both the audience as well as the entertainers.
Thanks for that, Jan. I appreciate it. And again, I appreciate J.J. Jan reminding us that this live experience isn't just special for the audience. It's special for the performers as well. And with Once, that's something you've always thoughtfully curated, is that artist's experience of the performance as well. As you're using different venues, taking it outside this summer, how are you thinking about that piece of it?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's really nice. Thank you. I am thinking a lot about the comfort of the artists all the time. The Rockwell, I feel like the Rockwell is as close to the vibe of Once as you can get. They are so brilliant with their hospitality. There's a beautiful space for the artists. It's a real dressing room, and they have a cooler with water and stuff in it. And I think that it's really important that when an artist arrives, that they feel that they have a place to sit their stuff down. We do that on the parking lot too. We have a quote unquote green room. It's actually a little container, like a shipping container with couches in it. And we try to make sure that there's always a space and that they feel comfortable and that they know that, you know, that they're welcome and they're there to have a good time. And I think that, you know, that's, yeah, creating that vibe. And then, you know, they're going to go on stage and they're going to feel good and perform and give it back.
So, Matt, I'm going to play a little sound. We've talked about the fact that Club Basim now live streams all of its shows. This is a bit of music from a recent open mic called Women Covering Women, held virtually. This is local singer-songwriter Megan Collins singing her song Too Close.
Now I'm wondering when you'll be home. I guess you never will. 'Cause you flew too close.
So I know, you know, you're a big fan of bringing forward new artists. Live music is coming back. What's one show you're really excited about seeing at one of your venues this summer?
For me, it's a couple of our festivals that are coming up that I'm really excited about. We have a bluegrass and old time festival called Down Home Up Here that's happening over Patriots Day weekend that we've been running for probably close to 10 years now. And we haven't had it in the room since April of 2019. And so, you know, we did a couple of virtual versions of it, and it's just going to feel so good to be doing the whole thing back in the room again.
And JJ, how about you? One you're really looking forward to bringing out live.
Well, I'm doing a festival series as well this summer, so I'm also very excited. I think that outdoor festivals are going to be really where there's a lot of joy this summer, because we can feel, like the caller was saying, you know, it is nervous making to be inside with a lot of people, and we're all doing our best and we're all doing everything right. But being outside is just a little more relaxing. You feel more comfortable with your mask off. So I'm really looking forward to getting back on the Boynton Yards parking lot. Our first show is June 11th, and we're going to be announcing the Save the Dates soon.
All right, that is JJ Gonson tomorrow. Watch for that. JJ Gonson, owner of Once Lounge, formerly in Somerville. Matt Smith, the managing director of Club Passim. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tatiana.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks for listening. Tune in again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.